So midterm elections done in the US, and it was, as was broadly expected, a victory in the Senate for the Republicans and a victory for the Democrats in the House of Representatives. But there's so much more to say than that. Let's bring in Dr. Thomas Whalen, first of all, Professor of Social Sciences at Boston University. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
There is a feeling that the Republicans, and specifically President Trump's administration, are overplaying his Senate victory, but that also the Democrats didn't do quite as well as they might have hoped. What's the general atmosphere now?
Well, the Democrats feel that even though they have not, you know, created the blue wave that everyone hoped for, they still have subpoena and oversight authority now over the executive branch, something they did not have before. So they can open up a number of investigations of the Trump administration and basically supply a kind of legislative check on his program moving forward. But, you know, I must say the breaking news right now is that President Trump just fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions, which might plunge this country as of right now near a constitutional crisis, because that means he's trying to pull the plug, perhaps, on the Mueller probe, looking into the allegations of Russia interference in the 2016 presidential election.
Yeah, can you tell us a bit more about the acting attorney general now and why that seems to be so detrimental to this probe?
Well, basically, you know, Trump has someone who is going to, he's going to slot someone in there, basically that will probably, many Democrats feel and many analysts feel, is going to inhibit the investigation moving forward, whether, you know, limiting the scope of the probe or maybe cutting off funding. But, you know, right now there's a lot of worried people in both Democratic and Republican parties because this is somewhat unprecedented. And this is a kind of a bold power grab.
Yeah, well, Matthew Whitaker he's the acting attorney general, has publicly spoken about the probe led by Robert Mueller going too far, also praising an article, we understand, about how Trump shouldn't even cooperate with what he described as Mueller's lynch mob. That's the kind of thing that's making people worried, right?
Right, that he's going to basically pull the plug on the investigation. But the other thing here is that, you know, under terms of succession, Rod Rosenstein, who is the deputy attorney general, who has approved, who is overseeing the Mueller probe, he was bypassed from Mr. Whitaker. So that does not bode well, I think, for the investigation either, where it's going.
With the House of Representatives going in the Democrats' favor, though, is there genuinely a sense that they will be able to, while armed with subpoenas, get to the bottom of the Russia situation back in 2016 and perhaps even have a closer look at those tax returns?
Well, I think that's the key, and that was the hope as of last night. But now, given what's happening, who knows? That, you know, Trump might claim executive privilege when it comes to his tax returns. And now that he has a person that he trusts in place as Attorney General in the Justice Department, that might just go away. So you might have a constitutional fight over, you know, the president's tax returns as well. And now you have a Supreme Court that's leaning conservative Republican, so they might back up any kind of decision that the president makes with regards to executive privilege.
There is this argument as well that President Trump is no stranger to dealing with belligerent enemies and that he might just vilify the House of Representatives and their Democrat majority and use that as a weapon. He's also no stranger to going it his own way, even in the face of Republican opposition in the past.
Well, in some ways, this is the best news he has for his 2020 reelection chances because, you know, Trump always likes to have a foil and that he can hold up to ridicule and to fight in the public arena. And now with the Democratic House, he has a basic perfect excuse for, you know, any legislative failure. I'll just blame the House of Representatives and Democratic control. So, I mean, in many ways, if you listen to his, you know, his comments in the week leading up to the election and his tweets of late, you know, he basically is positioning himself for that campaign. The 2020 campaign really began this morning.
Yeah, perhaps we need to put some context in there as well. Past presidents, including the still hugely popular Barack Obama, suffered pretty devastating midterm losses. It doesn't necessarily mean, as some people might intuitively think then, that it's going to harm your chances of re-election as president.
No, I mean, think about it. Bill Clinton was impeached in his second term, and, you know, he had popularity ratings 60%, and he actually, I think, picked up some seats in the election in his second term, a midterm. So, no, you know, sometimes it works in the president's favor, but we have divided government in the United States, and I think, you know, Trump's legislative program at this point is dead on arrival. I mean, he was talking about having another tax cut, but that's not going to go through now. But if you're a Democrat, you're happy in the sense that Obamacare probably now is permanent, that they cannot pull the plug on that. Because if the House had continued to be Republican, they probably, along with the Senate, could have put the death knell on Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act.
What's your feeling on how it might now distract President Trump from key foreign policy agendas? The China issue seems like it's not going to go away. But for us here, we're very interested in what the US is going to do in North Korea. And straight away, we had the cancellation of that meeting that was planned in New York between the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and visiting North Korean negotiator Kim Jong-il. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be an obvious reason why that would be cancelled based on the trips that President Trump has cited.
Well, if there's a grand strategy here, it's doing an awfully good job of being hidden here. And the same thing with his trade policy. You know, we're in a trade war with China right now, but at the same time, President Trump has declared war trade-wise on his allies. And he's just gone through some rough patch with Canada and Mexico. And so it's basically Trump against the world. And you're trying to discern, like, is there a pattern here, or what's the strategic goal? And, you know, I think it's basically kind of a knee-jerk, ad hoc policy basis. And that's kind of frightening on the international stage, because you're inviting, you know, major instability, you know, via a lot of American vital interest around the globe. So that's not going to make for a very healthy or safe or peaceful world moving forward.
Dr. Whalen of Boston University, thank you.
You're welcome.
Plenty of talking points. We will do our best to cover a few more of them with Michelle Yehi Lee, the Washington Post reporter covering money and influence in politics, who's been, like many others, closely following this midterm process. Good morning to you from Seoul.
Thank you for having me.
A quick note on voter turnout. It was unprecedented. We had an unprecedented level of global interest, by the way, in these midterms, but also at home, it was huge, wasn't it?
Yes, it really was. I mean, for a midterm election, it's quite rare to have this much energy and interest, certainly in the United States and even globally. I mean, turnout, a lot of it was driven by anti-Trump energy, anti-Trump voters who really shaped this election to be a referendum on the presidency of Donald Trump. You know, in 2017, there were a couple special elections that really showed the power of minority voters, younger voters, and female voter turnout. And then seeing that success, a lot of these groups that work on voter turnout had been working for many months to try to lay the groundwork for massive and record voter turnout, and clearly that worked.
There may not have been quite the blue wave they were hoping for on the Democrat side, but there has been talk of a pink wave. I don't know if that's offensive to some, but this idea that this was about women. We have seen a number of key victories for female representatives, but also the suggestion that women voted in their large numbers.
Certainly. I mean, maybe the term pink wave is offensive, and there certainly was not a blue wave. It was kind of a blue wave, but the interest among women to run for office this election, it was quite high, to the point where we were anticipating it to be another year of the women. And a lot of the women were motivated by the election of Donald Trump, who felt who thought that Hillary Clinton would be elected, and they either weren't as engaged or kind of took that for granted. And then they're realizing that they want to do something. They feel moved to participate in the process and feel that they are ready to step up to leadership. And a lot of these women are from are teachers and veterans and nurses, former educators, women who were in the education system, a lot of people who are good at building communities around them, building supporters, fundraising money. And I think that really showed in their success in getting elected. And then, of course, the Me Too movement that followed in 2017 made them even more empowered to bring about more gender parity in Congress, given that there's such few women in Congress at all.
But the first, they go on. We've seen two Muslim women elected for the first time. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York becoming the youngest woman elected to Congress. She's still in her 20s. Colorado Democrat Jared Polis, the first openly gay man elected governor in the U.S. Is this a kind of backlash? Are we actually seeing progress despite some of the fears about this Trump administration as a response?
Can certainly see this as a reaction to the Trump presidency and some of the policies that have been targeted toward minorities or disproportionately affecting minorities, women's rights being affected, the rights of gays and lesbians, policies enacted under this Republican administration, which is a huge shift, of course, from the Obama administration before it. And again, there's just so much energy on the left to bring about more diversity in Congress. And certainly in the election yesterday, there were a lot of firsts, like the ones that you had mentioned. And I think there's really an understanding that representation is quite low in Congress. Both chambers, the House and the Senate, have been largely old white men. And I think that voters are starting to see that maybe their faces or their interests are not quite being represented and that they want to inject more diversity in Congress. And that has really led to the success of these first record-setting candidates this year.
It's not just on the Democrat side either. And you are president of the Asian American Journalists Association, which may give you even more of an angle on this question. Young Kim is being celebrated here at home. She is 56 years old. So she doesn't meet that sort of person in her 20s. She's not Muslim, as far as I'm aware, so she doesn't attract attention for that reason. But she is the first Korean-American woman to serve in Congress, and she is a Republican, and she won in California's 39th district. Does that represent a boost for the Korean-American community and for women, or anything else notable in your view?
Oh, certainly. You know, Asian Americans are the fastest growing racial group and a very powerful electorate. And regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, the fact that there's more Korean American representation in Congress is a good thing. That means more diverse voices are being heard, more diverse ethnicities and races are being represented, and greater diversity and representation in Congress is always something to strive for. I think that as the Asian American electorate and population grows in this country, you're going to see more candidates like Young Kim running for Congress or running for re-election and just becoming more active in politics as the community itself grows, not just Korean Americans, but Asian Americans writ large. And I'm quite excited to see more of that, happen.
Michelle Yehi Lee for The Washington Post. Thank you.
Thank you.